Radio Real. Real radio, your reality.
Welcome to Off the Shelf,
the Second Life radio show and podcast about books and the people who love them.
I'm Kegia Girardi.
And this is Simeon Beresford.
Join us as we survey the literary scene in our virtual world. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Off the Shelf. I talked with Persephone Phoenix earlier this week. She was one of our first guests on the show, and she is the proprietor of the Blue Angel Poets Dive. She had some exciting news for us. The very first volume of poetry from the Blue Angel is now available online. Way to go, Persephone. You can check her out at check out the poetry at blueangellanding.com.
Yes, welcome. Our guest today, Widget Whitepree, who's one of the organizers between the SL podcast Virtually Speaking. She'll be talking about the show and its host, Jimbo Hoyer. And some of the authors and other guests they interview. We also have Kat Claiborne, Kat Alderson in Second Life. Kat's a motivational speaker, executive coach, and half a dozen other things. In fact, this list goes on forever. She's got a background in network marketing and, more importantly, is very active in Second Life. We're going to have a lot to talk about with these guests today.
Yes, we're lucky to have two guests who are so successful at bridging First Life and Second Life. Let's start off by talking with Widget. Simeon and I co-hosted a book discussion at Virtually Speaking yesterday, and I've been an audience member during some of their shows. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Widget.
Thank you very much. I'm really pleased to be here.
We're happy to have you. Would you tell our listeners about Virtually Speaking? What is it, and how did you get involved?
Well, Virtually Speaking is a weekly public affairs program that is simulcast and that is shown before a live studio audience in Second Life and then simulcast and archived through Blog Talk Radio. So every week, Jimbo Hoyer, that's the avatar name, it's Jay Aykroyd because we're switching over now. So Jay interviews one or another author whose field might be science or technology or politics or media or health or pretty much anything of current interest. I found myself in Second Life when I was working for George Lakoff, who had been a presenter at the Netroots Nation Conference in 2007. And following that conference, I received an email inviting Professor Lakoff to speak at Virtually Speaking in Second Life. And in that message, I understood almost nothing. I understood there was an interview, and I understood they wanted him to come and speak. But beyond that, I was pretty clueless. So I wrote back and I said, maybe we should talk on the phone. Tell me what this is. Jay and I had a few conversations. I thought, I'm not sure what this is, but it certainly sounds interesting. So I made myself an account, created an avatar, a very clumsy one, and came in world in order to see if I could figure out what it was and whether it was worth the time of the fellows at the Rockridge Institute. So I spent evenings after work, and within a short period of time, I was pretty sure there was something valuable here and that it would be worth participating. And that's how I got to Second Life.
Wow, that's not the usual track people take, but it's great. I imagine that a few of your guests have been in Second Life before your show as well, so you probably have a lot of sympathy for them. What do you find the biggest challenge in bringing those people in world?
Well, I do have a lot of sympathy for them. And I think the challenges are booking them first and then training because these are people who have little or no idea of how complex it is or how much practice it takes to feel fluent, to feel comfortable. In my first months, I would teleport somewhere and my hair wouldn't show up with me, and I would be embarrassed and appalled, or I would fall off of somebody's deck and I would feel clumsy, or 14 or 15 people would be texting on the screen and I'd be totally overwhelmed with all of the input. So I remember that experience when I'm helping new people become adapted. So booking is a challenge, although I understand from Jay that that gets easier and easier the longer we are at it. Mm-hmm. And convincing people that they need the training is tricky. I find that it's very helpful for me to have an hour with someone. Other people want to be done in about 15 minutes. But there are some things it's just really important to know as well as to be able to do, so that when you're in the interview and your adrenaline is running, you don't become totally overwhelmed by what's in front of you on the screen.
Right. I also am impressed by the avatars you create for your guests. You try to make them look very close to the real-life person. How has that come about?
The first thing I remember about that is when the fellows from the Rockridge Institute were going to come in, I was pretty convinced from my own experience that if their avatars did not evoke them, that they would be less likely to identify with the avatar and less likely to have a highly powerful experience. And I wanted them to have a highly powerful experience. The second thing that I was very clear about was that none of them were going to take the time to create an avatar that would function well or look like them.
Right.
And to be honest, they didn't really have the skills either, because using the sliders and understanding the mesh and, you know, all that goes into creating an avatar is complex. It's certainly beyond me. So when I got there, Jay was already having some people create avatars for some guests. And so far as I know, all but one of them, Dave Pollard, all but Dave needed to have an avatar created for them. What we do now is we have a number of folks who are very good at avatar creation. They are not trying to create an exact lookalike because the technology doesn't allow for that, but they are trying to evoke a sense of the guest. We want the guest to be pleased when he or she sees it. We want them to post a picture of their avatar on their blog or website or Facebook page to promote the show. And so it needs to look good for them. The woman who is currently creating avatars for us is Dori Bernstein of Dreams. Mm-hmm. And that's going quite well. And then we have a couple of other folks who are on call when we need backup support.
That's great. You mentioned that you have politicians, scientists coming in world for interviews. So virtually speaking addresses some pretty controversial topics. Do you find that the Second Life community responds well to those topics? Are they active participants in the audience?
They're very active. The show draws between 25 and 70 people every week. Those people engage in very lively back and forth with each other, with Jay, and with the guest. They post, they make assertions, they ask questions, they post websites, they make jokes. It's all in text, and it's very lively. So I think that's a good response, yeah.
Do you have to be on your guard against griefers?
Well, it's not a regular occurrence, but we do keep watch. Grieving is actually most likely to come in the form of disruptive chat, and then the challenge is always to starve the trolls. You know, it's the same challenge many of us are familiar with in blogs or on forums.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. For the most part, no. I mean, I've had an occasional person take a run at the stage, but it's usually because they're confused and they're not quite sure where they're going. They're new people. Mm-hmm. I've had people accidentally appear on the stage, and then I tell them where there's a seat so that they can get off quickly.
Yeah.
So for the most part, no. For the most part, people are pretty good.
Good. To off the shelf, of course, we're interested in the authors who you've brought on to Virtually Speaking. Jessica Valenti will be talking about the purity myths later this week. Who else has appeared on the show?
Between March of 2007, which was the first show, and the end of August, this August, 2009, we will have had 72 guests and 82 shows. So I was looking through my list, wondering who to tell you about, a little representative sample. The first guest was Marcy Wheeler, who's the author of Anatomy of Deceit, How the Bush Administration Used the Media to Sell the Iraq War and Out a Spy. That was the Valerie Plame case that's back in the news now with Vice President Cheney being upset with then President Bush about not pardoning Scooter Libby. Marcy now blogs at Fire Dog Lake as Empty Wheel, which is how people may remember her. Jeff Charlotte has recently become a member on the Rachel Maddow Show, which is tracking the story of the family, the secretive religious group that runs the mysterious C Street House in Washington, D.C. Jay interviewed Jeff more than a year ago when that story had yet to break. Margot Baldwin is the Chelsea Green publisher. They publish books about sustainability. And then fiction writer Terry Bisson wrote Meat, which is a very short story that I find endlessly amusing. So, big range.
It sounds like
I can tell you more, but I mean, there are a lot of them.
Yes, a good mix. But basically, you've got a tendency to interview politicians and activists. Do you ever really give them a good grilling?
Well, first, I'm not sure that we have a tendency towards politicians and activists. I think we have a tendency towards people who are adding to public life. And while there was an early electoral activism bias in that, because so many people came through Daily Kos, the large political blog,
yeah,
in the U.S., we really have a lot of media and science people, too, and sort of people in every part of sort of public discourse.
Yeah.
Now, as to who surprised me the most or where I learned the most, I'm not sure surprised is exactly the right word. I find them all deeply engaging. I probably learned the most from Juan Cole, who writes about the Middle East and who I had never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quite wonderful.
What was it, just the topic, or was it his way of speaking that brought you into it?
It was his way of talking about it. He has such a depth of knowledge of the region, and both a grasp of detail and of the larger questions that trouble us about the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
So that was astonishing. That was quite wonderful for me. I listened to that interview maybe 3 times.
Wow. Who are some of your upcoming guests, Widget?
Our upcoming guests. Give me... Now, I was ready for that question, and here we go. Next week, as you've said, we've got Jessica Valenti coming, and then the following Thursday, Mike Connery is a writer with Future Majority, and he has written a book about young people.
The millennials.
Yes. And then the following week, Marcos Melitzis, who is the founder of Daily Codes and the author of Crashing the Gates, which we're going to be discussing with you and Simeon one more time. It'll be great. And then the week after that, Lynn Margulis, who is an evolutionary biologist and quite controversial, and whose work is finally getting the attention and respect that it deserves. She struggled for years to have her views accepted. And then the following week, the last one that we have booked for August, we're going to have Greg Dworkin, who blogs as Dem from Connecticut. He is a pediatrician and epidemiologist who's very interested in global pandemics and especially writes about the global response to the flu pandemic. He's going to be on with Josh Naur, who is the CEO of Ryza Labs, and they've created a really impressive platform called Flu Tracker, which has been all along ahead of the World Health Organization and the CDC's in tracking the incidence of novel H1N1, which is the swine flu virus. So that's going to be a pretty exciting show. We'll get all the up-to-date information on that.
It sounds like you've got some exciting stuff scheduled.
We do.
I know that you're not only busy with virtually speaking, but for our last question for this interview, I'd like to know what else you're keeping busy with here in Second Life.
There's not a lot more time for me, but there are two things that I'm paying a lot of attention to. One is the upcoming Netroots Nation conference. There'll be a parallel conference in Second Life to the Netroots Nation conference in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and that's mid-August. There is a Netroots Nation island in Second Life. Your guests can take a look and check that out. There'll be streaming programs in from the face-to-face conference. And then I spend a fair amount of my time on Commonwealth, which is an incubator for mostly nonprofit organizations that are learning to use the Second Life platform to further their organizational goals and capacities.
Excellent.
So between, that's kind of my home. And what we're doing now is we're just about to move Netroots Nation to the northern border of one of the four Commonwealth islands. So that'll be very nice. Then I can walk across the bridge.
All right. Well, thank you, Widget. You've been a wonderful guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Now we turn to Kat Claiborne. Hello, Kat.
Hello.
Hello there.
That's great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So, now that you've totally thrown me, it's all your fault. What was my first question going to be? I was going to say you're also politically active and a big proponent of green energy. What energy sources interest you?
Well, I'm really intent on renewable energy. If you don't know what renewable energy is, wind, water, solar. I'm also a big proponent of alternative fuels. With a background in agriculture, alternative fuels are absolutely necessary if we are going to see our children and our grandchildren into the next century.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do to promote these?
Okay. Well, there's a lot of little things that I do. I am a speaker, and I am also a political campaign consultant and speechwriter. So I stick a, I stick a little of alternative energy programs into every speech I get a chance to write. I also, in 2003, with Alert little urging from a friend of mine, Mike Stackpole, founded Terra Verde Power. TVP is a private energy company in Wyoming, supplying power via wind. We've developed our own turbines and converters, and we are able to supply power to my own ranch, which, by the way, covers about 300 square miles of the state of Wyoming. We're also supplying energy to half of the county that we live in and supplying energy to all of the adjacent county and We're also able to help out the people on the Wind River Reservation by providing energy to them. We've also got technicians working on development of two alternative organic fuels.
What are the alternative organics?
Well, one of the things that gets bantied about and that most people are going to be most familiar with is ethanol. Ethanol is not a viable long-term solution to our energy problems. Ethanol, as you may or may not know, comes from a corn derivative. Right now, we are lucky enough to live in a large enough country with just a stable enough environment to support our crop needs, as well as to be able to help out some other countries. But as global climate change continues to get faster, I mean, every year we're seeing more and more changes. We're seeing more and more fields unusable. We're watching tumbleweed take over in areas where there's never been tumbleweed before. We're watching insect populations die out. We cannot look solely to crops. We can't destroy crops that we're going to need to feed people and animals in the future. So we need to get some organic stuff going that is based in waste. And yes. I am talking about organic animal waste. And as far as being able to convert the stuff that we normally throw away into fuel, recycling is not enough. We have to be able to take our trash and have it power our car or have it power our home or our hot tub or whatever else we're running.
Anaerobic digesters, that sort of stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next question. In Second Life, you were one of the major forces behind Third Life. How did Third Life begin, and what goes on there, and how did it get its name?
Okay, that's a lot of questions at one time. I'm going to try to zip through this one. In 2007, I took a look at Second Life. Some friends from another chat program called The Palace had urged me to come in and hang out with them. They were into the club scene, which is just not something for me. I don't have a lot of free time, as you suggested at the beginning of the show. I'm a pretty busy person. I've got a lot on my plate. But, you know, as soon as I downloaded the software and came into World, I was intrigued. So I poked around for a couple of weeks and decided that Second Life was a perfect place for author Mike Stackpole and I to promote some of our First Life projects. I dragged him in, and he was not happy about me doing this, but I begged and pleaded and cajoled, and he finally came in. 2 days after he came in, we rented our first parcel and started figuring out how to build a virtual dream. The name Third Life seemed natural to us. Mike and I both portray ourselves in World, and we're advancing our First Life passions. So, you know, sit there trying to come up with a name. We added our Second Life to our First Life and came up with Third Life. Mm-hmm. The name has been usurped by a couple of other groups, and we may be looking at a name change very soon, so watch out for that.
All right.
You and Mike provide great support for writers in Second Life, especially through Mike's weekly office hours. Many people don't realize what actually goes on during the office hours. Why don't you explain the format just a bit?
Okay, I will do that, but I've got to preface that because I preface everything. For those of you who don't know, my business partner is Michael A. Stackpole. He is an 8 times on the New York Times bestselling list and has won awards for every type of writing you can think of. So Mike holds... Go ahead.
I was just going to say Mike is great.
He is. He really rocks. Mike decided to hold office hours in Second Life instead of responding to questions on forums and stuff like that. So we have virtual meetings once a week, Wednesday nights, on our sim. Mike and I are in voice, and he answers questions. We answer questions that are asked in text chat. That makes it easier for us. Mike takes questions on writing, publishing, e-publishing his works. He has a lot of original stuff out there. He's also an award-winning game designer. So he also answers questions about gaming, podcasting, and the convention scene. I provide answers for folks looking to get and stay focused, answer questions on promoting and marketing in Second Life, setting up First Life websites. I also have a small web hosting company. Answer questions on how to deal with objections and rejections. And I also heckle Mike a lot because that's why I'm here after all.
That is why you're here. Yeah, there's a great synergy between the two of you when you take care of the office hours. It's definitely a partnership. But you also offer a lot of workshops through Third Life. What kind of things are you making available to the Second Life population?
Well, one of the things that we support, it was actually Mike's idea, but he called in somebody he knew from writing conventions to run the Fantasy and Science Fiction Writers Workshop. They meet weekly. They serve as a social group and a critique group, and we try to offer as much support and presence as we can there. Mike does different classes on writing as his schedule allows. He's taught serial fiction, 21 Days to a Novel, editing and stuff like that for aspiring writers. Second Life clothing designer Fook Me Sideways also offers classes on our sim on avatar basics, in which it had touched on how hard it is to get a decent looking avatar put together. So Fook Me offers some insights there and teaches people how to present themselves in the best possible light. She also teaches branding in Second Life for anybody who's trying to get their name or their product name well known. I offer workshops on content creation in Second Life. That doesn't happen very often. It's a 10-week course. I do single-day workshops on time management, internet etiquette, Second Life etiquette, and advanced marketing.
Great. And how do people find out about what's being offered?
Well, I plurk it, I Facebook it, I tweet it. People in our groups receive messages, and Mike also posts stuff on his blog. We have a little blog started for the group, but since I'm the one who has to post everything, it's not updated as often as it should be.
Oh, well, you've also got an impressive list of SF writers in to do readings. Who are some of your favorites? And do you have anyone lined up?
Okay, lots more questions to answer here. I would have to say that our favorite guest so far, Mike doesn't really count as a guest, even though he does frequent readings for us and seems to be the group's favorite. My personal favorite is Robert E. Vardaman. Bob is so personable, he is so smart, and he embraces the Second Life audience. He doesn't have a lot of time to spend here, but when he fills in for office hours or comes to do a reading, he's phenomenal. He's probably the most prolific living author. He's written over 300 novels and thousands of short stories and magazine articles. Another favorite of mine is Phil Plait. Phil is just stellar. He's brilliant. I mean, he's brilliant, and he's got the super geek gene, which I love and respect. He's a world-renowned astronomer, author, and is currently serving as the chairman of the James Randi Educational Foundation.
So you feel that... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So you feel Second Life's a good way for published authors to market themselves?
It is a vital venue for published authors as well as aspiring writers. Authors have to market themselves. Their publishers are not going to do it. If you are writing fiction, you're not going to get support from a publisher. They can't support themselves right now. There's no way they can support you or market you. Blogs and forums are one way to connect with an audience. But coming into a 3D world is a much more powerful and personal experience. It allows for a connection with real-time feedback. It's vital. You need to know what your readers are thinking about. Authors are not artists. Any author who's running around suffering for his art isn't a writer. Writers write. Authors are entertainers and or educators. To entertain or educate, you must gain and connect with an audience. I can't think of a better way to connect in real time with real people who already have a predisposition to what you're doing and have disposable income to spend money on what you write than by coming into Second Life.
That's a great point. Definitely an audience that will respond if they're willing to show up to your reading. They're willing to buy your work.
So. Exactly.
Yeah, and of course, things like this and Adele's Meet an Author podcast continue on out there, podcasts.
Virtually speaking, there are lots of opportunities for writers.
So, what about you? You write as well. What kind of writing do you do?
Nothing nearly as phenomenal as the people who have been mentioned so far. When I was young, I had some short stories and poems published. And I will say this, I have never gotten a rejection slip. Every single thing I've submitted for publication has been published by the first person I sent it to.
You're not natural, you're not.
I don't care for writing fiction, though. There are people who do it better than I do. Same with poetry. These days, I write in the personal growth arena. I am a motivational speaker. I got my start through network marketing. And in network marketing, direct sales and stuff like that, there's a lot of self-help books promoted. And excuse my language, but self-help books, all of the ones that I have read, just except for two or three, just really pissed me off. Because it seems like all of these people who are these personal growth gurus are trying to help you shift responsibility for your failings onto other people, or to use excuses about, you know, a poor childhood or reduced circumstances for not going out and achieving what you could achieve or being the person you could be. My first manuscript had a working title of, and there's a cuss in here, Shit Happens, Get Over It. I wanted to make a real difference. And I know from experience that anyone can do anything they set their mind to. I want to help people along on their journeys.
Well, I think a good title would be Just Get Off Your Fat Ass.
That is another good one.
You've got a sequel already.
I've actually written the second book. It has been published as an audio series through Nightingale Conant. And I'm working on my third one. I've got one more chapter to go. And my fourth book will be released online only. My choice, not my publisher's. He almost had a heart attack.
Yeah, you definitely are a big supporter of ebooks as the wave of the future.
Exactly.
Oh, well, let's head back to Third Life for a moment. I hear you moving, you're moving Sims. Are you getting your own place now, an island?
Yes, we are. Mike and I made a deal when we first came into Second Life, and we rented our very first parcel, which happens to be, was a tiny little parcel in this Sim that we now own. But our thing was that we would spend money on ourselves, or we would spend money on our friends or guests who came into Second Life to help them get their avatars polished or to get cool little gadgets, but that we would not spend money out of pocket to buy our own land. We would earn it, or if people wanted to gift money because they were getting what they needed from us, that we'd be happy to accept that. We don't go around begging for tips by any means. I'm far too proud for that. But we've earned the money to buy a region and a half of mainland, and now we're going to move to our first island. There's going to be some theme changes. We will be keeping all the programs we have going when we move to the island. We will be adding some new ones, a lot more of events, social events for writers and podcasters, and real opportunities at networking among professionals. And we certainly hope that you and Kay are going to come along for the ride, at least visit us frequently.
Oh, yes, yes.
Definitely.
We'll be poaching your guests as often as we can. So it's just when your proposed name change, you're thinking about doing it when you move there.
Yeah, it'll probably be transitional. A lot of people, we only have about 400 or 500 group members, but they seem to really identify themselves. They refer to themselves as third lifers. And, you know, we like that. We appreciate their loyalty because they are wonderful people. They are just, they inspire me every single day. We've built the brand, but there's some other people who poached on the name, including somebody who makes accessories for the Gorian lifestyle, a religious group that whose views tend to be the complete opposite of mine and Mike's. So that's not working out for us very well. And people are starting to get these groups confused. So, yeah, we're thinking about a slow transition to a new brand.
Fair enough. Well, thank you, Kat. I've enjoyed talking with you today.
Oh, I've enjoyed it so much. Thank you again for having me. This was so much fun.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Kat and Widget. We're going to wrap up the show, but I'd like to remind listeners to visit our website, thebookstacks.org, if you want to know more about us or our guest.
And now we go to the in-world discussion. I think we've actually got an audience today.
Off the Shelf is produced for Radio Real by Kegia Gherardi and Simeon Beresford. Technical production is by Radio Real. You can find Radio Real on the web at radioreal.org. Music on this program includes works by artists on the Magnatune label. The music in the general introduction is John Playford's All in a Garden Green by Eileen Hadidian and Natalie Cox from their album Dolce Musica, A Contemplative Journey. The off-the-shelf theme music is 1500 Tons by Burning Babylon from the album Stereo Mashup. And we bid you goodbye with this piece, Hagagasan 14 by Eternal Jazz Project, from their album, Gratis Jazz. You can learn more about Magnatune and their artists on their website at magnatune.com. Off the Shelf is licensed under Creative Commons.